Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
We speak to Dr. Carl. Dr. Carl, good morning. He's our science communicator. How are you?
Oh, ever so peachy keen.
Excellent. Can we talk about bees and power lines?
Yes, this is an interesting experiment which may or may not be correct. Now, normally I don't report on this sort of stuff early because every now and then these things are retracted.
Mm-hmm.
But if you get some bees and you look at these bees and they've got a little hive somewhere and they're buzzing around like crazy, they're having a really good time, and then you install a machine near where they live, which puts out the equivalent electromagnetic field of a high-voltage power line running overhead,
mm-hmm.
and you turn it. So it's not a real high-voltage power line because it's very expensive. They just test it with something that looks like it. In that area, the bees will avoid the flowers to duck in to get their nectar pollen thing happening for a couple of weeks and then come back, but at a lower rate than before.
Wow.
So this could be an effect of high-voltage power lines that we didn't know about before. Now, on one hand, we haven't actually tested with real power lines, but we should do by getting a whole bunch of beehives and putting them under the power lines. And normally you can't put them under the power lines because the government doesn't want you to. And it's sort of mown flat with grass. You know, there's just grass. There's no plants to get stuff off. But we need to do that experiment. And some people claim they're uniquely sensitive to power lines, but when we do the experiments, it turns out that they're not. But maybe we're getting hit that maybe some people would, because we all have different sensibilities. And I mean, during COVID, some people got really knocked out by COVID and some people just shrugged it off. You know, so there might, here are, a definite might, be some potentially harmful effect of power lines on the ability of bees to gather nectar. Maybe. There you are, maybe.
Yeah, but it's fascinating. It's actually always incredible how much we learn from bees, because their whole their social behavior, their communication, the way in which they operate is absolutely fascinating.
Oh, and they have a hive, and it's broken up into different classes. So in the hive, you've got one fertile female, only one. And she's a queen. You think, well, she's the boss and wears a crown. No, she's a prisoner of the hive. Wait for it, Howard. I'm going to shock you here, but she pumps out 6 times her own body weight in eggs every day. She's a slave of the hive.
Wow.
Her job is to make it. Gone are the days when she could fly around. She's just stuck to the ground.
Right.
Then there's a small number of males, who maybe 100 or so, and they were allowed to exist for a while, while she was still growing,
right.
And then they mated with her, and once they'd mated with the queen, mate, they were gone. They were booted out, and so
it's
she
rough,
had now.
Hey? That's all royalty. No wonder Meghan Markle fled. Yeah.
Well, I didn't realise it was that bad. And so there's all these different females who are sterile, so the males get booted out. And then she then starts pumping out eggs based on those sperm for the rest of her life, up to 6 years. And then there's these sterile females who can't have babies. They cannot have babies, but they do share DNA with their sister, who is the queen. And they're broken into different classes. And so there's the ones who work in the nursery, and they might be some that do a bit of agriculture and grow, and there's some who are soldier ones. And when a bee stings you, like the soldier one, they stab you with their sting, and this sting, if you sort of brush it off, you brush the female bee off your skin, the sting stays behind, and that sting has got its own muscle and a bit of power supply and toxin, and it will keep on stinging you after she has had a sting ripped out of her belly and set off to die. And why does the female bee do this apparently suicidal behavior that'll lead to her death? Because the only way that she can help her DNA go to the next generation is by a dive for the hive.
Right.
She commits suicide to protect her sister, the fertile queen, who's still pumping out the eggs. So she takes a dive for a hive. The whole thing is a complicated story to get you to taking a dive for the hive. I like the rhyming. Sorry about that, Dr. Howard.
No, we always, nothing quite like a rhyming couplet. Let's talk about wood smoke. Wood smoke has done a lot of damage to people in Australia. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, like, Australian air is remarkably clean. And so I live not far from the beach.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm up there going for an early morning walk when the sun is rising. Every now and then there'll be a bunch of people from Asia who have never seen and never will see the sun kissing the horizon, because they live in a part of Asia where the air is polluted, that the sun rises into the smog, and two or three sun diameters or four sun diameters above the horizon, it emerges out of the smog. I've seen this at, for example, Hong Kong Airport at sunset, right? And so they come to Australia, and part of it is seeing the sun on the horizon. And so they see it, and then they get on the bus and they go away again. And our air is remarkably clean in Australia because we have a very low population, a very large surface area. But even so, several thousand people die in Sydney and several thousand more in Melbourne each year because of the pollution from burning fossil fuels. But separately from that, we've worked out that roughly another 1,000 people each year die in each city from burning wood smoke. And so they when I say die, they have what we call a premature death. And so when I was a doctor in the kids' hospital, at one stage I was doing the night shift. So I'd go out about 10:30 and then work until, you know, a 10-hour shift. And if I went out at night in winter, and if I could smell wood smoke in the air, I knew that as I walked into casualty, the emergency department, it would be wall-to-wall full of kids with asthma. And we'd bring those kids in, we'd put them into a bathroom, we'd turn the hot water on flat out, we'd give them drugs, and we'd just bathe them in this moist atmosphere. If necessary, we'd leave them overnight and keep them there. And it would cost of the order of several thousand dollars per kid with asthma per night to be housed. And we did it, no charge to them. And also, no charge to the people who did it to them, the people who burnt the wood. So on one hand, I do like the idea of a crackling fire, but in all my outback travels, I hardly ever had a fire because you think, well, it's just dead wood, but the animals live in that dead wood. It's part of the eco-cycle. And so if you burn the firewood, then the animals don't survive so well. On the other hand, if you're in a situation where if you don't burn the wood, you don't get light, or you starve because you can't cook the food, you'll burn
different
the wood.
Story. Yeah.
You know? And so it's different in different parts of the world. So we've just discovered that on average in Australia, burning firewood kills a couple of thousand people each year on top of the premature deaths caused by burning fossil fuels. But then if you've got a poor country, you're stuck with that. And
Absolutely. Then
that's another problem in the worldview, and we won't solve the problems of the world in this show.
That's where we leave it. Dr. Carl, thank you as always. Absolutely fascinating and always something for us to think about.